Welcome to Music and Medicine with Dr. Carl Wern. On the first Sunday of each month at this time, Dr. Wern soothes you with classical music and great ideas for living a more healthful life. Now, here is Music and Medicine with Dr. Wern.
This special program, the month of May, is devoted to the theme of Mother's Day, which is the preeminent day of the month. I have a particular devotion to mothers because I was brought up by a mother who single-handedly raised three children, two doctors and a lawyer, because her husband died when the children were young. We will also celebrate this month a particularly dear composer of mine, Rachmaninoff, who is Russian, and fittingly enough, Russia is considered a feminine characterization because we talk of Mother Russia that has been used as a national theme for Russians since the Middle Ages. It actually used by the Reds and the Whites during the terrible civil war in Russia, turn of the 20th century. I think they call it Mother Russia because the overwhelming sense in Russia is that you take care of your children the best you can, and mothers are the best at doing that. And a very interesting story, I met a Russian doctor when I was working in Pittsburgh, when I was running three emergency rooms at St. Francis in Pittsburgh, and I talked to a number of Russian doctors who had come over to America in the 1990s, and they were in their training programs. They said that the Russian family and the role mothers play is very unusual compared to other countries. And the emphasis of the mother is that she wants her children to become the most educated and most successful they can be, but not necessarily go out and earn a lot of money, ignite the world in the business sense. Mothers will sacrifice in Russia having their children go to university for years just because they take pride in the growth and maturation of their children. And I had no idea. And this is sometimes to the detriment of society because the children feel like they're taken care of. I think the tendency of Russians is to be comfortable in groups and not be independent. To depend on mother, who is the all-embracing figure in their lives. We'll talk a little bit about why motherhood is so important because the mother, in many ways, with the wisdom of the mother and her passion for her children, she is in a unique position to make the lives of the future generations more productive and happy. We talk about music and medicine, but the mother combines her great knowledge of things, just like doctors, who also then have to have a passion, and that's what musicians have a passion for, and then they create the most successful of families. I just read some conversations with Yehudi Menuhin. He thinks that the best musician and the best music teacher is somebody who is like a physician. He makes that parallel comparison, and he says that it's the physician who has this huge knowledge base and also compassion and understanding of the emotional needs of the patient. Yehudi Menuhin, who is one of the great violinists of the 20th century, he wants to assume the mantle of a physician when he goes in to teach his students. The first inclination of all children is to please their mother. And her interests and aspirations are often channeled into their children in a very, very unusual way. And sometimes the father does that, but most often, it's the mother. The mothering of musicians and also the father figures also at some point. But mothers are a great inspiration, I think, for the development of musical personalities. Motherhood, if we say sort of with a little bit of humor, the second oldest profession and the biggest on-the-job training program ever. There's a wonderful saying that youth fades, love drops the leaves of friends, a mother's secret love outlives them all. The hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world. And now I'd like to introduce Rachmaninoff, comes from Mother Russia, and he was born in the month of May. And Venture, interestingly, we'll talk about his mother was a piano teacher. And there's a lot of famous Russians, musicians, whose mother taught them music early on in life. Rachmaninoff will be a centerpiece of our program. But before we get to Rachmaninoff, I want to introduce the theme of Mother's Day into this broadcast by starting the program with a live performance of Beethoven's C minor trio that was performed by myself and Susan Walters in 1993, and she was 7.5 months pregnant when she performed this piece, which is quite amazing. And I didn't realize that she was pregnant when performing this, but I not only did a sound recording, but we did a video recording of this performance. And there she is on stage with a large belly, barely able to reach the piano, and performing in a miraculous fashion. Also talk a little bit about this piece. It's Opus 1, Number 3. It was the first published music of Beethoven when he was studying with Joseph Haydn. He finished these three trios, and they were all performed in a concert. And Haydn came up to him afterwards and said, "You know, Beethoven, I liked your first two trios. They were very good, but there's something disturbing about your third trio." And of course it was disturbing because it was brash, full of unexpected sforzandos, and it was in the key of C minor, which was demonic for Beethoven. Obviously, everybody knows about the Beethoven Fifth Symphony in C minor, but C minor was one of the great keys that Beethoven chose when we wanted to break out into a new style of expression in the creation of music. This was done at the Porta Memorial in April 1993. It's the Beethoven Trio in C minor, the first movement, and it's featuring Susan Walters on the piano, Mayuki Fukuhara on violin, and Dr. Carl Wern on cello. Now, after this wonderful live performance, we will go to Rachmaninoff, this great composer who was born in 1873 and died in 1943, 70 years old, and he died of melanoma, and he died in Hollywood because he had come to the United States at the turn of the 20th century to leave the terrible things that were happening in Russia with the takeover by the communists in 1917. He came from a wealthy family. He had to escape from Russia because of the takeover by Lenin. Very interesting, in the 15 years before he left Russia, he had developed a huge reputation all over the world for his piano playing, his piano compositions, and at one point he was also the conductor of the Bolshoi Opera. But one of the great compositions that he created early on in his life is the famous C-sharp minor prelude, Opus 3, number 2. And it's a fabulous piece that he wrote early on in his life. He gave the copyright for $25 to a European music publishing company, and they proceeded to make an immense fortune of that, and he got paid nothing. The only thing he had to put up with was the fact that when he played recitals, and he was well-received at all these recitals, he couldn't get off the stage because the audience would demand that he played the C-sharp minor prelude. Now, the preludes are akin to the etudes, but they're more poetic and more expressive. And here, in this fabulous C-sharp minor prelude, we will hear Rachmaninoff play Rachmaninoff. Now we will listen to the prelude in C-sharp minor, Opus 3, number 2. Performed by Serge Rachmaninoff.
Thank you.
The next piece on the program is also Rachmaninoff playing, but this is a little different, and we should understand one of the great things about concerts in the 19th and 20th century, they had a tremendous more variety than they do now. For example, even when Chopin played concerts, it wasn't just Chopin playing. He would have friends singing. He would have violinists playing Mozart violin sonatas. So there's a potpourri of musical menus during these concerts. And also what was very common until recently is that transcriptions were often played at concerts. Now we tend to be very pedantic and just play a composer's pieces and we don't play composer making a transcription. But this is a wonderful and appropriate to today's topic is the Rimsky-Korsakov, The Flight of the Bumblebee, that's going to be played on the piano by Rachmaninoff. And for myself, this has a very important meaning in my life because when I was 16 years old, I applied to the University of Rochester science and program that also combines training at the Eastman School of Music. And I flew up with my cello to Rochester in the morning, and then I played an audition in the afternoon for the faculty at the Eastman School of Music, and I played The Flight of the Bumblebee, and after I played it, they said, "You're accepted," unanimously. So this was tremendously good for my ego for a 16-year-old boy who didn't know what was up and what was down at that time. So now we will hear Rimsky-Korsakov's Flight of the Bumblebee, played by Rachmaninoff. I might add that it's appropriate for the topic today because bumblebees, there's the queen bee, the all-important queen bee, and she is the maker and shaker of life for this particular species of insect. Now we have the Flight of the Bumblebee, the piano transcription by Serge Rachmaninoff. That is one incredible virtuosic performance by Rachmaninoff, who unfortunately, when he came to the United States, stopped composing as much. He only composed about 6 or 7 pieces after he came to the United States in the late teens because he had to make a living from performing on the piano, which he was very successful at. And he did refuse an offer to be the conductor of the Boston Symphony. But he was very successful in his performances, and he and Horowitz were considered the greatest piano performers of the early 20th century. The next piece on the program is particularly close to my heart because it's the cello sonata that he composed, Opus 19, that he composed early on in his life. It's particularly close to me because my mother had a recording of this wonderful piece that I listened to maybe 500 times, and it's a recording of this wonderful piano and cello sonata that features William Capel on the piano and Edmund Kurtz on the cello. I listened to this performance many times. It was a performance made in the late 1940s, and when Rachmaninoff composed this piece, he made sure the piano part was as important or more important than the cello. Because remember, he was a pianist, and he wasn't going to let the cello assume the major role in this piece. So really, this cello sonata is almost like a piano concerto with cello accompaniment. Another great thing about this recording I'm talking about with William Capel and Edmund Kurtz is two very interesting things. First of all, Edmund Kurtz was a very distinguished English cellist who started performing in the 1930s and actually was performing until the 1980s and early 90s. He lived to 95 years old. But a very interesting story about Edmund Kurtz is that he developed a romantic relationship with a very wealthy woman with the name of Rothschilds. This was one of the richest banking families in the history of the world, the Rothschilds. She wanted to marry him, and he wanted to marry her, but he made a condition for the marriage. Edmund Kurtz had a brother, Ephraim, who was an aspiring conductor. He wasn't getting a lot of job opportunities, and he was living hand-to-mouth. And Edmund said to his incredibly wealthy fiancée, "I will marry you for certain if you make sure that my brother is able to pursue a conducting career." And she did that, and he became one of the most famous conductors of the 20th century. The other thing about this recording is William Cappell, who was one of the greatest American pianists of the 20th century. Unfortunately, he died in a plane crash in 1953 when he was coming back from a tour in Asia. He was so great that at 17 years old at Juilliard, he was offered an RCA recording contract, and he was noted by Vladimir Horowitz to be the greatest American pianist who ever lived. These plane crashes were not uncommon because they were actually jet planes, and the stabilizer in the jet planes were not good, and I owe it to the fact that my father missed one of these jet plane flights, because when he missed it in 1947, that enabled me to be born, because that jet plane was crashed. If it hadn't been for his tardiness, I might not be talking to you. So now we will hear this incredible first movement of the Rachmaninoff Cello Sonata. It's performed by Dr. Carl Wern, but even more important, by Susan Walters, who has performed this sonata over 100 times with a very well-known cellist in New York, Marcy Rosen. And she's done it at times from memory. I've had the benefit of performing with this sensationally gifted pianist a number of times, as you've heard from previous recordings. And this we recorded in 2010 in New York City. We did it in one session. Now we're going to hear the wonderful first movement of the Cello Sonata by Rachmaninoff, Opus 19. The Cello Sonata is in G minor.
Thank you.
Rachmaninoff was at his apex and had a great career in as a composer and a performance of piano, and he got sick very quickly in early 1942, and he had rapid spread of the melanoma to his lung, and he died within 8 months of contracting melanoma. Now, I am going to introduce you to a oncologist who I work with on a weekly basis, Dr. Mark Keating, who is going to provide us some information about how we are able to put at 40-50% of people who have metastatic or melanoma that's spread, who can be either cured or put into remission for a long time. And now I will introduce you to Mark Keating, a premier oncologist who works in Altoona, Pennsylvania. He was trained at the University of Pennsylvania College, Jefferson Medical School, and he is an outstanding specialist in his profession. And we need your assistance because we're talking about Rachmaninoff, the famous Russian composer who unfortunately died at age 70 a year after contracting melanoma. In 1943, virtually everybody who got metastatic melanoma died. And when he died, the world was shocked because he was such a great composer. And they said about him when he died, this was a man who had hands of steel and a heart of gold. So tell me, how are we going to inform the general public about melanoma and give them optimism about surviving this disease?
To better understand cancer, one has to have a slight background in what normal processes. Life begins with a sperm fertilizing an egg, forming one 46 chromosome cell that has all the information to make a human body. This cell will divide, use all this information to create a brain. On completion of creating a child, the information will be put on the shelf, for the most part never used again. An important concept in cancer, as sometimes in the development of cancer, these instructions that are never to be used again are used again by cancer cells, are taken off the shelf and reused in an inappropriate way. Another process that's important in the development of, in understanding newer breakthroughs in cancer treatment, is the immune response. When someone has a pneumonia, the immune system will be activated to attack the bacteria in the lung. So there'll be an attack process activated, and soon after there'll be a damper process. So the attack, damper. And this is done so that the attack process is not so aggressive that it will destroy the normal, like destroy the lung. And this sometimes happens where even in COVID, the immune response is so aggressive, it actually destroys the lung. And it's not necessarily the infection that caused the damage, it's the immune response. What is cancer? Cancer is when a normal cell breaks, starts growing out of control. Clonal, so one cell breaks, makes clones of itself, will grow out of control, and it is because of damage to the DNA, to certain genes will break, and that's different in all cancers. All cancers usually have different genes that break that drive it. So when someone comments, I wish they would cure cancer, my response to that is, which cancer are you talking about? They're all different. So you can cure melanoma, but that has nothing to do with kidney cancer or lung cancer. So they're all different, and that's what makes it difficult. In melanoma, a melanocyte, a skin cell that helps kind of absorb the energy of the sun so as to prevent damage to the skin, one melanocyte broke. Melanoma is resistant to chemotherapy. We are now moving more into a targeted therapy realm where more laser-guided missiles that kind of shoot a missile through the window into his bathroom, or so a targeted therapy in general where oncology is moving with less collateral damage. The new medicines for melanoma are BRAF inhibitors, which will have a 50 to 70% of patients with melanoma that has spread all over. About 20% of those patients will possibly be cured, where this will be in remission for 5 years. 10, 15 years ago, there was about a 5% at best chance of any response in treating melanoma that has spread everywhere. So that is termed metastatic melanoma.
We will end this portion of the music of Rachmaninoff by having a performance by Vladimir Horowitz, one of the greatest pianists of all time, and also a Russian, who will play the prelude in G-sharp minor, that's Opus 32, much later in Rachmaninoff's career. And the great thing about Horowitz is that he became one of Rachmaninoff's best friends when they met each other in the United States. And they would spend 3 to 4 hours sometimes playing the piano together, either four hands or they'd play two pianos, and they were remarkable friends. And actually, Rachmaninoff said of Horowitz, who performed a lot of the famous piano concertos, there were five piano concertos of Rachmaninoff, and Rachmaninoff said, "You know, Horowitz, you play my piano concertos much better than me." And of course, we have those fabulous recordings of Vladimir Horowitz playing all the Rachmaninoff piano concertos with the orchestra conducted by Arturo Toscanini, who became his father-in-law. This is a wonderful piece. It's been one of my favorite preludes by Rachmaninoff, and it's been such a favorite that I actually had a Juilliard composer transcribe this piece for piano and cello, but I never got the gumption up to play it. Another very interesting thing about this G-sharp minor prelude that's a favorite of mine is that I was in Florida part-time at the Lido Beach. I had a condominium down there, and I had a friend who inspired me to write my book. He was a leading polymer chemist in the world. His name is Gray Wright, and he had a fantastic business. He coated the 7-Up bottle when they went to glass to plastic. If you've had any Bristol-Myers medication, he did the processing of that medication. If you ever gone over the Skyview Bridge in St. Pete to Bradenton, he's the guy who has the polymer coated the Skyview Bridge. But we used to go there and eat breakfast at the Verdura room at the Ritz-Carlton. And one morning we were eating breakfast there, and they had a piano there. And all of a sudden I hear the G-sharp minor prelude of Rachmaninoff. And it was played very well. And I went over to the piano. There was a woman playing the piano in her late 30s. I started asking her some questions. Turned out she was a doctor, and she was meeting with a lawyer because she was an expert witness in a malpractice suit. I'm like, wow. I never got her phone number, but she was an extremely fine pianist, so I assume she was a very fine doctor as well. Now we will listen to the prelude in G-sharp minor played by that towering genius of the piano, Vladimir Horowitz.
Thank you.
The theme of this program, obviously, is Mothers and Mother's Day, and Russian composers, particularly Rachmaninoff. But I'm going to play a special selection, commemorate my mother on Mother's Day, and I'm going to do this with a live performance of a piece that I composed called Waltz Treats. And I composed the melody, and then I had a very distinguished composer at Juilliard, Jonathan Dawes. He arranged the piano part, and this was in 2004, and I performed this at a live concert on Martha's Vineyard in 2005, and it's Waltz Treats, and I'm playing the cello, and Robert Koppelson is the pianist. It's from August 2005. In one more tribute to my mother, I am going to play a wonderful recording by Glenn Gould, who was one of the great Bach exponents of the 20th century, and he actually introduced the world to the Bach-Goldberg variations, where it was forgotten for many years. It's used in movies, and even the New York City Ballet has a ballet to Bach-Goldberg variations, because of Glenn Gould's amazing performances of that. I have a wonderful performance, live performance of the Goldberg Variations done in 1959 from Salzburg. I discovered this recording in a small church goodwill shop in Hancock, Maryland. But on this recording was also some of the sinfonias of Bach that Glenn Gould had recorded in 1957. He was the first Western artist to visit the Soviet Union. This is a wonderful group of three-part harpsichord pieces that Bach wrote the keyboard. And it is more sophisticated than the inventions of Bach that were basically two voices. And I'd like to say something quickly about Glenn Gould, is that my mother fell in love with Glenn Gould when she heard a rehearsal of the New York Philharmonic, and Glenn Gould had just come to town for the first time in New York City, and it was a dress rehearsal, and because she had donated money, she had gotten tickets for these dress rehearsals every year. Glenn Gould was performing one of his hallmark pieces, the Bach Concerto in D minor for harpsichord or piano and orchestra. Leonard Bernstein was conducting the rehearsal. My mother was there. She had never had Glenn Gould before. After the first movement of performing this piece with the orchestra, the entire orchestra stood up and clapped, which was a very rare phenomenon, because to compliment anybody on their performance. Now we'll hear the fabulous Sinfonia in B minor, a live performance from Moscow in 1957 by Glenn Gould. Thank you. going to end this program on Rachmaninoff, one last selection of Rachmaninoff. It's the Vocalise that he composed in 1915. It was a set of 14 songs that he wrote for a wonderful Russian soprano. The unique thing about this song is that it has no words. The singer has the opportunity to choose a vowel and use that vowel to express the wonderful melody of this song. It's called Vocalise. It's a very famous melody, and it's been transcribed for many, many instruments. And this is the transcription for cello, and I'm going to be performing this transcription of Vocalise for cello with Ed Clark, my long-term accompanist from Connecticut. So here we have Vocalise by Rachmaninoff, performed by Dr. Carl Wern and Ed Clark. This has been an exciting discussion of the music of Rachmaninoff and a wonderful commemoration of Mother's Day. I'd like to end this program with a special tribute to a wonderful group called the Mamas and the Papas. This was a group that was very famous in the 1960s. one of the outstanding singers in this group was Mama Cass. When I was working in the emergency room on Long Island, there was this rumored story that she had died because she was eating a peanut butter sandwich and she choked on a peanut butter sandwich. And I also spoke to some physicians who had worked on Long Island, and one of them had actually taken care of Michelle Phillips, who had come to the emergency room several times. She lived out on Long Island. But the true story, Mama Cass did not die from aspirating a peanut butter sandwich. She died from heart failure and morbid obesity in a fancy hotel in London. And now we have the great song, California Dreaming, because I think one of the great things mothers do all the time is they dream about what their children will become and how they will become successful in life. Here we have now the Mamas and the Papas singing California Dreaming. This program has been very dear to my heart because it talks about mothers, Mother Russia, and Rachmaninoff, and it's been a pleasure to perform and also to listen to these wonderful pieces. I look forward to June when we'll be focusing on some special programs associated with music festivals and the music of summer. This is Dr. Carl Wern. See you next time on Music and Medicine.
You have been listening to Music and Medicine with Dr. Carl Wern over WRAX 106.5 FM and 1600 AM. Join us again on the first Sunday of every month for Music and Medicine right here on RAX 106.5. If you'd like to hear this program again, visit BedfordCountyRadio.com. See you next time on Music and Medicine.